place here in Victoria Chapel. And so if you miss any, or if you'd like to recommend that anyone have a listen, just ask for a sheet on your way out, which lists the URL where you can go to the website. And that's courtesy of the Center for Creative Communication, Centennial College. Also like to thank the sponsors of the Kickstart series, Canadian Television Fund, as well as CBC News World and Canadian Human Resource Council for their additional support. And to remind you that this panel will be lasting for an hour, at which point there will be a 15-minute break. And again, if you do have any questions for the panelists following, if you wouldn't mind just asking them outside as we set up for the last panel, My First Doc, which will be taking place from 3:30 to 5. And now I'd like to welcome the Director of Programming of Hot Docs, Sean Furnell, who will introduce the other panelists.
Hello. Oh, there you go. Sorry. Hi, everybody. I'm Sean Furnell. Jessica mentioned Director of Programming here at Hot Docs. Welcome to the second session of Kickstart. Hope you're having a good day so far. And I think this panel will be very enlightening around festivals. Now, this is Kickstart, so we're thinking about pitching it sort of at a very kind of introductory level to festivals and how to submit to festivals and what festivals are all about, demystifying a little bit that process for you. But as Tom has suggested beforehand, I just want to get a sense, how many of you have submitted films to festivals before? No. So maybe a third. So we'll keep it a little bit introductory, but maybe I hope there'll be some questions too, and hopefully this, as I say, will demystify it a bit. We have a very experienced panel, all representing really terrific film festivals. So they'll speak to their festivals specifically, but obviously each of our panelists has a lot of general knowledge about festivals in general. Klaus Danielson from a festival in Leipzig, the Documentary and Animation Festival in Leipzig. Klaus, just tell us a bit about Leipzig and what you're all about, and I'm going to ask all the panelists to do that just as an introduction.
So very briefly.
Very briefly.
The festival I'm in charge of is based in Germany, Leipzig, Eastern Germany. It's a dinosaur, it's 50 years old. We'll celebrate the 50th anniversary this year. But at the same time, I think it's one of the most dynamic festivals, I hope, in Europe. It's probably the second biggest after ITFA in the Netherlands. We have a two-genre festival, documentary and animation. Animation, we only look for shorts, for short animated films. And documentary, we have three competitions, an international competition, a national German competition, and introducing this year a competition for young talents. We show around 200 documentaries every year, 200 animated films, have awards amounting to nearly 60,000 euros, so it's quite nice to win an award there. We have a whole slate of industry offers or events comparable to what is being done here at Hot Docs, with a pitching session, producer meetings, video library, a market screenings, and so on. So it's something for a general audience and also for industry guests.
Did you mention your dates?
This year our dates are from 29th of October till the 4th of November, and we have a little flyer here. You see this cameraman, it's the picture from the very first festival in 1955, and we have resuscitated him, and you can
literally,
grab this flyer.
Literally resuscitate him.
And you can grab the flyer here or downstairs on the German table in the industry center.
Great, thanks for that. Fleur de Nopperts is formerly of ITFA in Amsterdam and now of Sheffield. How are you liking your new job so far?
It's very good. Very different though. Very different festival.
Tell us about it, Sheffield.
Yes. Well, Sheffield is a festival in the UK. It was started in 1993. It has two sides to the program. One is festival. And the other part of the program, which is as important, is the sessions program. So that's a lot of panel discussions and master classes and workshops. And the festival was started to be a meeting place for people working in the industry to meet and discuss, well, watch films and discuss what is going on and what the changes are and all that. Besides the festival, there is the meat market, which I will be running, which is all one-on-one pre-scheduled meetings between producers, filmmakers, broadcasters and distributors and such. And besides that, we have, like at each festival, a videotech. So it's like the Docs for Sale at ITFA, or the Doc Shop, you call it here? The Doc Shop here. In brief.
And Fleur previously ran the forum in ITFA, the very famous forum on which the forum here at Hot Docs is modeled. Fleur, this combination of sort of art and industry, do you find there's a lot of crossover between the two sort of sectors at your own festival? Are filmmakers going to a lot of the market events, or is it or is it kind of separate?
No, I feel very much in Sheffield that it's really a mix. So the festival attracts all these professionals, so the whole event is the marketplace. And there is very structured market events that take place, like the meat market and the video tech. But at the same time, all around the festival, at the screenings and in between and at the drinks, people are doing meetings. So it's a mix of watching films and getting inspired and doing your business.
Yeah, important part of festivals, combining this sort of art and industry. Tom Powers, the documentary programmer for the Toronto International Film Festival, which I'm sure many of you know well. Tom, tell us about that little event that you work at in the fall.
The Toronto International Film Festival will be taking place this year, September 6th to the 15th. Our documentary section is called Reel to Reel. Sean Farnell used to be the programmer of that. Last year we showed about 40 documentaries, most of them in the Reel to Reel section, and then other documentaries in some other sections, in our master section and in our gala section. We showed two documentaries this year for the first time in 13 years that a documentary had shown in the gala. So. We at Toronto, we really are trying to raise the visibility of documentaries within that festival. And part of what that means is often we're showing documentaries by veteran filmmakers like Barbara Koppel last year. We showed sneak preview clips of Michael Moore's Sicko that is now going to open up at the Cannes Film Festival next month. And we're also trying to present an international spectrum of documentaries. We have 12 there are 12 programmers that cover films from all over the world, and each one of them are looking for documentaries in Latin America, Africa, all around the world, and I try to coordinate with them to see what kind of documentaries are coming in. When it comes to short films, you should know that we do program shorts by Canadian filmmakers, but we only program shorts by Canadian filmmakers, and the rest of the films we show are feature length, what we consider over 65 minutes. Our deadlines this year for submission, I think May 11th is for Canadian filmmakers and June 6th for international filmmakers. But I could be totally wrong about those dates. It's kind of off the top of my head. You can go to the Toronto International Film Festival website and clarify that.
And how many documentary submissions would you receive there in a given year?
I think we received 500 submissions of features last year.
Klaus, your submissions?
We received 1,800 documentaries from all over the world.
Fleur, do you have a sense yet how much Sheffield gets sent?
I think Sheffield is about 1,500.
Wow. And Patricia Fireman from Silver Docs. Tell us a little bit about Silver Docs and when you are and how many films you received each year.
We just closed our submission process a couple of weeks ago, and I think our submission number was 1,735 or something like that. So it's a pretty significant number. Silver Docs is an all-documentary festival. It takes place basically in Washington, D.C., right outside Washington, but in the Washington media market. We're going into our fifth year, and we've grown pretty significantly for a kind of young festival, I think. The festival is presented by the American Film Institute, which is an important part of what Silver Docs is about. The AFI is a 40-year-old institution in the U.S. that's the largest nonprofit exhibitor in the U.S. So there's also AFI Fest, which is a sister festival of ours in November. And AFI just added a festival in Dallas, so there's kind of a network of festivals. But Silver Docs is the flagship program of documentary for AFI. The other thing in our name is Discovery Channel, and Discovery Channel is actually, their world headquarters are across the street from the theater that the festival takes place in, and they're our founding sponsor and huge supporter. But importantly, I think for filmmakers, in terms of the content and the films that we present, they're the same sorts of films you'd see at all of my colleagues' festivals in terms of we look for work that exhibits the cinematic vision of an individual filmmaker, that's real storytelling, that's risk-taking, that's international. Our program's about 60% U.S. and 40% international. So that's a quick overview.
Yeah, well, let's sort of focus a bit to start on the submissions process a little bit and look at, you know, getting through all this work. You said about over 1,700 submissions. I know Hot Docs gets 1,800. Tom, you're looking mostly at features, so 500 features is a lot of work to get through. Fleur, I mean, I know mostly you're focused on market events, but you certainly have an awareness of the volume of work, and you, even in your market events, you're considering a lot of projects, and Klaus, the same for you. Where do you start in that process of finding your way through that massive submissions? And Klaus, I'll just start with you. You're dealing with sort of how many submissions again?
How many what?
Submissions?
1,800.
Yeah, about the same as
plus
that.
Plus 600 animations.
How are you approaching that big stack of DVDs? Do you have a team? What's the filtering process?
I have a team, a selection committee of set up of five colleagues. We go to festivals, like I'm here now, to screen new films. So we are traveling. We have some correspondents, so to speak, or colleagues in some countries who attend festivals to watch for new films. And we get many films which are simply sent to us. The entry deadline of our festival is in July. And so then we go through all the films. So we watch, or at least watch parts of all those films which are being entered. Our selection committee comes to Leipzig for 1 month, and it's a bit like being on a solitary island, in a confined prison camp. So they watch from morning till night. You can imagine they watch the films on a TV set. So it's 12 hours at least watching documentaries every day, watching TV. To be honest, we can't watch all the films full length because it would be suicidal. If you just think that the average documentary has a length of 1 hour. Of course, we also get shorts, and we get many feature-length documentaries, so it's 1,800 hours of documentary watching. And it's also like a psychic trip in a way, because you are really confronted with all the problems which are there in the world. I mean, you're facing every conflict, all human disasters and disabilities and terrible fates, and only very few funny or humorous documentaries. After 2 weeks, you see that my colleagues and I have these rings around our eyes, that people become depressive, that they become aggressive, that they really need to be well being taken care of, and they start having nightmares. It's a real difficult thing. I mean, we are not watching fiction, but we are watching documentaries. But still, we are watching every film. Sometimes we only watch 15, 20 minutes, and then you know if a film is the style, how it's done, and you know if it's something for us or not. We are not looking for classical TV documentaries which are commentary driven. Mm-hmm. We also, like you express it in a nice way, we look for more for author documentaries which have a kind of different approach, which have a strong story, which are innovative, which are provocative, which are very close to their protagonists, and we try to filter out the best films. But then after the festival, when I start again going to other festivals, I come to a festival and think, oh, this is a beautiful film, and why didn't we select it? And then I find out it was entered at our festival, or I talk to the filmmaker, he says, well, I sent it to you, you didn't choose it. And I say, oh shit, why didn't we choose it? This also happens, because if you watch films like that, it can happen to you that it's subjective. So one has to be very frank about it. If a film of yours is not being selected, it absolutely does not mean that it's a bad film. It simply means maybe also that the person who has watched the film had a bad day, or couldn't stand the 10th film on suicidal approaches.
In your own filtering process at Leipzig, is there sort of a safety net to sort of, in other words, are films getting looked at twice? I mean, I know that's a luxury we all,
We can't look at all films twice, but we try to, and those films, after the first round, we have we cut down the number of films, and then we start to watch them together. To make up a short list, and that we last year we ended up with 400 documentaries where we thought, well, they would be great in the festival, and in the end, something like 130 films made it into the festival, 130 new films, and the other 70 films were retrospectives, special programs where we also pick up films which might be a bit older, but which fit into a subject, like we have thematical subjects. This year we'll do a special on paradise. We did a special on humor and documentary, so we try to also create special programs which attract a new or broader audience and make them understand how fascinating and great documentary and how diverse documentary can be.
Fleur, Klaus is obviously looking at finished work, but has someone that's running a lot of markets, you're also often looking and evaluating proposals and trailers. Tell us a little bit about that process and what sort of factors you're looking for to sort of anticipate how a documentary is going to turn out. I think that would be really interesting.
Yeah. There is, of course, a very big difference, I think, in selecting films for a festival, because then you select for festival audience. And if you select projects for market, I used to work run the forum in Amsterdam at IDFA, which is an international pitching forum like the TDF here at Hot Docs. And then you select projects. Well, first of all, they have to be international projects, so that's what you look at. They have to have an international angle to the story that they're telling and to the subject that the project is about. But you also look at the broadcaster that is attached. In case of these international pitching forums, the project needs to have funding in place already. So that's one of the criteria you have. And besides that, there's always criteria like having a good division over the different countries. So you try to have a sort of even spread so that it's a fair selection in that sense. And you try to have not too many of the same subjects, so in that sense you need to have a spread as well. So there's different criteria.
Is it often for you what's more important, the story or the director?
I don't think you can answer that in general. It depends, really. But I think it has to be if it's the director, the story has to be good as well. But it's not that you always go for the famous directors, or at least for the forum we try to take risks as well and take projects of people that you don't know to bring something new to people so they don't get all the usual suspects there. Yeah,
absolutely.
All the time.
I used to run the IFP market in New York, which is the Independent Feature Project market for independent filmmakers in New York, and that was just for American films, but they didn't have to have a broadcaster attached. So we looked at work as works in progress with the submission application. And just to sort of add to what you said, some of the things that we would consider would be, there's a zillion stories in the world, but filmmakers you get sort of coalitions around certain subject. So you look for a unique take, a unique access to a certain subject. You know, there's a lot of films right now about orphans in Africa. Is your particular take on it really different than every other person's take on it? We've dealt with tons of first-time filmmakers, and this seems like an obvious thing, but if you can get an executive producer or a producer mentor to attach themselves to your project and you're a director, someone looking at your project looks at it differently. They say, well, there are wonderful filmmakers in New York like Al Maisels that will adopt a project and sort of shepherd it along. And then you look at it differently and say, well, there's something here and I see some potential.
Great, except not from Al Maisels anymore.
Except
he's
from
adopted
Alice.
Too many.
Yes, he has.
Adopted a lot. Tom, you say you're getting 500 mainly feature docs submitted to Toronto. Are you working with pre-screeners or most of the other programmers to sort of filter through some of that work?
It's a combination. We do use a pretty small number of pre-screeners, I think maybe relative to other festivals. And I have the benefit of working with a pretty large programming team. And I would say that every film that comes into the festival we try to give it the same kind of consideration. There are, because I can't personally look at 500 films, the films that I tend to look at first are films by filmmakers that we already have a prior relationship with, the filmmakers that we know, films that perhaps come recommended through other industry people we know, other filmmakers. That we know, and then just as part of good practice, I will just take a random number of films by filmmakers I've never heard of, just take stuff off the slush pile to see what's in there. And in fact, it was out of that slush pile that I programmed a film last year called Iran Cinematographic Revolution. I'd never heard of the director, didn't know anything about it, just popped it in and was very impressed by it. So there's that. While I'm talking, I want to pass on some other resources that beyond this panel you could go to explore. IndieWire.com is a daily newsletter of news about the independent film industry. In fact, just a couple days ago, they had a big article about film festivals and some of the politics behind premiering at film festivals, written by Anthony Kaufman. So indie is I-N-D-I-E, wire.com. You should definitely be looking at that. There's a website called dword.com, d-words.com, which is an international chat room for documentary filmmakers. It is something that you have to kind of qualify to be into, but if you send them an email and say, I'm a documentary filmmaker, this is what I'm working on, you can get through that qualification process. And that's a great area to learn from other filmmakers, get tips from other filmmakers about other festivals. There's another website, I think it's called Docs in Progress with hyphens, docs-in-progress. Is that right? Is that where I did a long, quite exhaustive interview about some of the strategies behind film festivals.
Great, thanks for that. Patricia, a little bit about Silver Docs' selection process, and then I also want to ask you all about some of the mistakes filmmakers and producers make when they're sending work to us all. Go ahead.
Our selection process is similar to my colleagues. I think we work with a lot of volunteer screeners who we sort of qualify. They write a sample coverage of films, and then those films filter up. And then they're always seen by someone that's on the actual screening committee too, even just a couple of minutes of it to sort of cross-check that. So that's important, and then it kind of filters up, and then there's a weekly discussion meeting. One of the other things that I think does happen is what you were talking about in terms of sometimes programmers, you sort of know your own predilections. So sometimes a film will come in that I just know isn't my kind of subject matter, and I will look at 10 minutes of it and say, I'm never gonna like this film. So putting it back to one of my colleagues because they may really get it because the production values are pretty good, but it's just not,
sure.
You know, and so you just, it's important that we work as a team. There's a director programming, my colleague, Sky Sitney, who's back in Washington slaving away programming because our festival's June 12th, right. But that it's a collaborative process, you know, with one person in charge, but we really have to rely on other opinions.
Yeah, we do the same at Hot Docs. In terms of mistakes, common mistakes filmmakers make in terms of submitting to festivals?
DVDs, they have to play.
The DVDs have to play. That that's so true. I mean, it's a big problem. You always test your DVDs, maybe in a couple players. Klaus, anything?
Well, I think it's think about how to best promote your film. So it's really important that you have a short synopsis of the film ready and a long one, that you have photographs, that even when you plan your film, you think about taking stills of the film, which you will really need later on for not only for the festival catalog, but also for press coverage and for a poster and so on, so that you think about what material might be useful for promoting the film.
Do you look at a lot of the supporting material in the submission process, or are you just ever looking at the film?
Well, we have this, we collect the supporting material for every film, and when we watch at the film and have questions or want to find out more about it, we go to the material, but it's not necessary to go there. It is needed when the film is being selected, but sometimes you want to go back to see, is there a broadcaster attached to the film already? You want to look at the CV of the director or the production company, and so on. So so that is needed, and we require this material. If not everything which is required is there, then the film can be kicked out of formal reasons. We have an online form now which is quite extensive, I'm afraid, but it we ask for all the information also in order to be able to include the film into our doc market, which is an additional platform to promote the films, where we invite international buyers, festival programmers, distributors to watch those films. So we really want the films to travel after our festival. And important, or something which I would take into consideration, is to send the films as early as possible. Don't wait for the deadline, because usually when the deadline approaches, the mail or the people from the courier services, they come with big boxes of films, which all arrive on the last weekend, and then a colleague of mine is dealing with putting them into the database and so on. And of course, then all of a sudden we get, I think, 1,000 of those films, of those 1,800 films, come only just meeting the deadline. And if you send your films earlier, we are a bit more relaxed in watching the films, doing all the administrative work, and it helps because we are not under such a time pressure.
Yeah, that's great advice. I mean, we're the same thing at Hot Docs. there's a sort of really backlog that we're always trying to get caught up on, and we get a bit more impatient with the films, to be perfectly frank at that point. Fleur, in terms of submitting unfinished work at the project stage, what are some common mistakes that people make in terms of their packages or their trailers?
There's lots of, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I think there's a difference there because it's something in progress. And I was also thinking when you were talking about sending in the films that what happens a lot at festivals as well is that the film is almost finished when the deadline of the festival is coming up. And then it's a very difficult decision, I think. Are you going to send in the rough cut or how far you are and with an explanation note to that or not? And that's, I think, something where you should, if you're in that situation, you should consult with someone that has more experience.
That's right.
Show them what you have and see if that, they think that's a good idea to do that. It depends. Sometimes it's fine and it can be
maybe one addition
on the basis
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, you should maybe get in touch with the festival in advance if you know your film will not be finished by the deadline, but it will only be a rough cut version, and tell them that it's going to come. And maybe even ask if you can send it a bit later after the deadline.
Yeah.
But what is really important is that on the final DVD which you enter, that you write on it, this is only the rough cut version, or sound mix is missing or something. That it's not only on an explanatory note, but the person who screens the film might not have that note in hand, but only he or she will have the DVD. So this very crucial information that the film is not finished, put it on the final DVD. That's really, really important.
I even recommended dropping the title card right on the master there and just explain exactly what version is. We all like to see, I'm going to guess, work that's not quite finished because we know it's new. So that sort of can be a plus.
Yeah.
Yet there is, as Fleur mentioned, it's kind of an art to knowing how finished your film is and when you should be putting it out there. For instance, my recommendation is always, you know, if you're still doing major structural changes on your film, don't start sending it out. It's actually a quite common mistake. If you're at picture lock or real fine cut, we all can sort of give a film a benefit of the doubt in terms of like your sound mix isn't done or some scratch narration or something like that. But there is a real fine line there, and you have to be aware.
And I would say, picking up on that theme, I would say one of the biggest hazards I see in films that are actually in festivals is films that are being rushed into festivals and are not quite finished.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Sean and I roomed together at the Sundance Film Festival, and we talked about things that we were watching at Sundance that really felt they could have spent a couple extra months in the edit room.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the filmmakers must have felt that, oh, it'll be positive for us to rush this into Sundance, even, you know, and then maybe we can go back to the edit room. But I think it's ultimately not good for that film and not good for that festival. And I don't mean to single out that festival in particular. But it's definitely not good for the films because it means that you're getting the most exposure with an inferior work.
You're not putting your best foot forward, and maybe you've just sort of had your one shot. There's been a critical mass of opinion based on that screening, and it's tough to sort of recover from that. Patricia, do you have experiences in that?
I think one of the things is it's often an issue of length, actually. It's one of the big, it's that, you know, it's all aspects of the film in terms of it not being done. But I can think of films I saw at Sundance that I felt that same way about. That, you know, when it's a tighter film, then it really runs they have a life that they're supposed to live. They're supposed to be a 70-minute film. They're supposed to be a 90-minute film. Like, it makes sense. And oftentimes, you can't get those last 10 minutes down and really finesse it, and you're rushing to hit a festival deadline. And yeah, I think that what you just said is absolutely right, that then the buyers see it and people see it and they don't kind of, it's easy. There's so many films coming at the buyers and so many films coming at distributors that if you think, you know, that would have been a much better film if they could have done these couple of things, but oh, there's these other 12 films, I'll go look at them. So you really don't get a lot of second chances in this process, I guess.
Just more generally speaking, and to Patricia's point, do you think that length is one of the most common problems that documentaries have? They just go too long sometimes, is that close?
Yes, it often happens that a film could be better, more straightforward if it was shorter. It's a common mistake. In Germany, for example, we have requirements by film funds that a film has to be 79 minutes long in order to be qualified as a feature-length documentary for a theatrical release in order to access funds and so on. So people try to stretch it to 79 minutes. And this sometimes is not for the best of the film. So often it's really, I would really advise all of you, and I'm a filmmaker myself, to also show the film to somebody who's not been so deeply involved in the film to have a different or a more distant evaluation, and it will usually make the film stronger.
Tom, what's the cutoff at TIFF in terms of how you define what a feature is and what a short is?
65 minutes is what we can, 65 or over is what we consider a feature. So it's pretty low.
Does that sync in terms of the way theatrical distributors think of a feature? Do they have a cutoff time?
I think theatrical distributors would probably consider 70 a bare bottom length, and probably are more comfortable in 75 or 80 range, feeling that they can charge, you know, people the $8 to $10 a ticket,
right,
for that.
Yeah.
The Academy Award rate number is 50, isn't it?
The Academy Award rate might be lower. I don't know what it is 50. Specifically, and it changed.
It's 50? It's over 50 for the...
Yeah, that's why I was mumbling, because I wasn't sure, because they change it every year.
You're on record. We're being podcast.
Yeah, I know. We're being podcast, so I don't want to be recorded forever. I think that it's 50.
Okay.
Which is an odd number, of course.
Yeah. At Hot Dogs, it's 16 over is a feature, and under 60 we consider mid-length, and then under 30 we consider short, FYI. Let's talk a bit, even beyond our own events, a little bit about this notion that all filmmakers and producers have to make a decision on where they're going to premiere their film. How important is this to you, Klaus, this notion that of obtaining premieres, and what advice do you have in terms of filmmakers who have to develop a sort of strategy to do that?
Yeah, that's a very tricky thing for a filmmaker to decide upon. There are some film festivals which require a premiere, a world premiere or international premiere. And I started to direct this festival in 2004 and gave a lot of thought to it. We are very close to ITFA, to the Amsterdam International Documentary Film Festival, which is in a bit stronger position because it's been more well-known, it's been more popular among industry people. There were many more broadcasters present. And Ali Derks, the director, was also here at the festival. She decided to, correct me if it's not correct, but she wants premieres, at least I think European premieres.
She doesn't work there anymore.
Pardon?
She doesn't work,
I don't
there,
work
anymore.
There anymore.
No, okay. But I thought about it, and as a filmmaker, if your film is being finished in spring, let's say, and then you wait for a festival to have the premiere, you wait, for example, for Amsterdam or for Leipzig, or for any other festival, and you wait for half a year, and then they tell you, which we have to do, yes, we are really interested in your film, it's strong and we like it, but we are not sure. For example, in our case, the final decisions are being made in the beginning of September only. So you might be waiting for half a year, and then you will, in the end, the film is maybe the film number 19, but we only accept 18 films, and then it's out of competition. And then we tell you, but we showed in our general program, but you probably will want a competition for the film being watched and being getting more being perceived by the press, getting more press reviews and so on. So it's a tricky thing, and then you have lost half a year, and after another half of a year your film will be 1 year old and too old for many festivals. We, for example, only accept films which have not been shown publicly for the first time 1 year before our festival. So that's a really tricky thing. That's why I decided we want German premieres, so we don't want films which have been shown in Germany. But for our audience, it's not important if the film has been shown in Amsterdam or in Switzerland or in Toronto before. So we decided we want to have the best program, the best films in there. And of course, we prefer films which have not been shown so often, which have not been around, because we have a lot of press and a lot of producers and commissioning editors coming as well. But I think a film should be traveling. It should be seen by as many people as possible in as many countries as possible. And that's why, as a basic decision, I said I won't enter this competition ring between festivals. Still, you have to compete. Still, we have to compete with Amsterdam or with Sheffield or with Jihlava and Czech Republic and so on. So you try to have the better arguments. I tell the people it's a high quality. I tell them we are doing this and that for your film. And then filmmakers will find out, and the word spreads, and I think this is what works in the end. But you should have a look at the websites of the festivals. You should talk to fellow filmmakers who've been to the festivals, who've shown their films there, and see what has happened to the films after the festival. If a distributor picked it up, if it was sold to TV, for example, Sean was in Leipzig and at other festivals, and I'm really glad to see that some of the films which premiered at Leipzig are now here in competition. So that's wonderful to see that those films are being pushed forward. And But it's a tricky thing. And then the fiction festivals, like Toronto mainly is a big fiction festival and a very well-known and highly regarded one, they also come in and have discovered that documentary is an attractive genre and that the audience likes it, like you see here, that the audience is crazy about documentaries. So there's another competition with the fiction festivals, and the theatrical distributors tend to go to a fiction festival because they make their money with fiction, with drama, and then they pick up maybe one or two documentaries every year as an additional thing. So this is a complicated world, and we as festival programmers and directors have to compete in that, and you have to think about it and really think about it cleverly. But on the other hand, don't wait too long for your film to be premiered. It's a delicate subject.
Tom, how much is that a factor for you in terms of a variable in your decision-making process?
Well, I think the key word that you said is strategy, that the filmmaker, each filmmaker needs to kind of plot out what's going to be best for their film and to be sort of realistic for what's best for their film. That not every film is going to be a Toronto or Sundance film, and that's fine. I'm a filmmaker myself. My film's never played at Sundance or Toronto, but I quite like those films. They never even played at Hot Dogs.
I used to work at Toronto, sorry.
But you know, I'm quite proud of those films, and they did quite well in HBO and critically and so forth. So festivals are not. I think there can be sometimes too much obsessiveness, too much emphasis placed on what festival exposure means. And on the other hand, festival exposure can be very important for a certain kind of film in the way your film gets released. So I don't think there's any one answer. It's about talking to as many people as you can who've been through this process before.
And also about knowing your film and what's best for your own film and understanding where your specific film would be a best fit. It's not always at Sundance or Toronto. It's not always at Hot Dogs. Or you just have to know the festivals and know your own film. Clara, is Sheffield concerned much with premieres, or how are you approaching that there? Do you know?
It's similar to what Glass just explained. We're not looking to compete with other festivals and have only premieres. We need some premieres, UK premieres, that is, so not international world premieres. And otherwise, we really want to have a program of what we think are the best films. That's what we're looking at. And we also try to include experimental documentaries that are cross-platform, mm-hmm. so experiment more in that direction as well.
Right.
So, it should be a more varied program.
Yeah, I think it's the same here at Hot Dogs Class.
One thing which is a killer for a festival is if the film has been shown on TV. So you should really watch out when the broadcaster will schedule the screening on TV. Or if you have a theatrical distribution, or if you look for a theatrical distribution, you should watch out when you make the contracts with the broadcaster to block the film from being shown on TV too early. That for us is a reason not to take a film.
Yeah, always give yourself a festival window and hopefully a theatrical window with your broadcaster. It's a fight you're going to have. I know our own policy is that actually we'll consider a feature-length version if a significantly shorter version has been broadcast. We'll still consider the feature-length version. However, it's a factor, it's a variable in our decision-making process regardless. But we won't rule it out.
Do you insist on premieres, Sean?
As Hot Dogs? No, we have much the same policy as you. I mean, obviously because of our position in the Canadian landscape, we're getting a lot of world premieres of the Canadian work. There's some other work that we've kind of found along the way that happens to be world premieres. We like that. We all like to introduce work. But the same as you, I think our festival, it's important that the public sees the best available films to us. And I think it's important for a film to have a certain critical mass and momentum through the festival circuit. And there's probably only a handful of films in a given year that can truly do that. An example maybe from this year's festival is The Monastery, which actually premiered, had its world premiere at Copenhagen, did IDFA, did Sundance, has done a number of regional festivals to the US, and I think it will emerge from all of that as probably one of the key documentaries of this year because it had that critical mass, and we all overlooked our premiere biases because we wanted our audiences to see that film. And there's an example where that makes it very successful. So our first goal is put together a great public film festival, hopefully introduce some new work because there are people here coming to look for new work, and that's really what we're trying to do. And anyone, did you want to speak to premieres? Anyone go to the floor?
I just had one other thought, not so much about the premiere issue, but in terms of thinking about what your film is and what it's about and where it best fits. It's really worth researching the festivals. I'll give you an example. Our festival's in Washington, D.C. Last year, we did a program on global health, which is a difficult, challenging issue. We had the world premiere of this film called The Blood of the Yingzhou District, which is about HIV/AIDS in China. It's a short film. It's a difficult film. And we did a really big program around it and had these amazing global health professionals there. It was an exquisitely beautiful film. It ended up winning the Documentary Short Academy Award last year. We're happy that we did that. But more importantly for you as filmmakers, think about where your film might do best. I mean, South by Southwest in the United States, huge music thing going on at the same time. If you have a music film, it's harder to get in because everybody knows that, but it's a great place to have a music film. And also the other programs, as we talked about earlier, that festivals have that can connect you as a filmmaker with other professionals in the industry. So Silver Docs has a conference, you have a conference. I mean, Toronto has access to everybody. You have a forum, the forum here, or Meat Market there. So really look at the offerings at every single festival. And prioritize the ones that are the highest profile in terms of your calendar. And then if you can do the smaller festivals following, that's great.
I want to get some questions from y'all. I know we can really, in an hour here, can only scratch the surface. There is a lot to talk about, but just some introductory questions. I know we have one over there. Jess, are there mics on the floor? Yes, there are microphones. So because we're podcasting, please use the microphone. Thank you.
I'd just like to inquire about applying for the festivals. I know that there's now some new online ways that you can apply to several. What are your thoughts on that? Is that an acceptable method of application? There's one that I just came across, Out of the Box or In the Box.
Out of the Box.
Any comment on that?
Anyone working with
one way or the other?
Anyone working with, you work with Out of the Box?
Yeah.
How does that work for you?
It's fine. I mean, we'd love to have our own online solution for this, but what Without a Box offers filmmakers is sort of one-stop shopping in terms of putting your application information out there. And as a festival, it allows us to just download the information and pull it into our database.
So you like that?
Yeah. Yes. I know some filmmakers have an issue with Without a Box in terms of application fees and issues like that, but I think it's handy.
Does Silver Docs have a submission fee?
We do, and I'm not going to remember what they are right now.
I forget what ours are. Do you guys have a submission fee?
No, yeah. We don't.
No,
it's good. Not really common in Europe yet. Yeah. We are thinking about it to reduce the number of entries, to be honest. Yeah. But on the other hand, no, we haven't done it, and it's not. ITFA hasn't. Do you have one?
ITFA doesn't introduce it this year.
Okay. Sheffield has one.
Sheffield, yeah.
Tom, does TIFF has one?
With a steep one.
A steep one?
Yeah.
Has it reduced the number of entries? No.
Maybe. I mean, hearing the entries you guys get, they'll kill me.
Yeah, but we're getting short work, too. I mean, I'm not sure, Klaus, that it reduces the number of entries, to be honest. I'm not sure that it reduces the number of entries, to
yeah.
be honest.
I don't know.
And about entry fees, I'll say, because there are a point of contention a little bit. For us, because of the volume of work, we need, if we're going to thoroughly consider that work, we need an infrastructure in place. We need staff, and really the entry fees, you know, don't cover that at all. But they help us offset some of those costs. That's why festivals charge them. I know it's a bit contentious, but I mean, we need a full database system, people to run that. Obviously, a staff of programmers to if we're going to thoroughly consider work, you need an infrastructure, which is why festivals charge fees. Go ahead.
Coming back to your question, online entries, we have introduced an online form like many festivals, and the next step now is that we accept online entries so that you can send us your film in a predefined file, which there's technical information on our website, and you can send us the file straight away or tell us where to. We tell you website and we can download the file, and this is something we are experimenting with and introducing this year so that you don't have to send a DVD anymore, but that you can send it from your editing computer straight to the festival, which will be very convenient.
I had that experience three times this year, actually, and not by request, just because the filmmakers were rushed and they sent me or a log on onto a site to watch, and you know, they didn't have any problem with me watching on a monitor. I think it's more and more that we'll be seeing this.
We are trying to introduce it because our market, our film market, our video library is digital, so You don't see the film. You don't have to wait for a DVD or VHS tape like it's still here in Toronto.
We're old school that way.
Yeah. So we last year we introduced a fully digitized market, so you can watch any film at any time by the click of a mouse, and it's very convenient. Saves a lot of time.
It's awesome. I used it. We'll have that next year.
Great.
It's really great.
It's really great for international filmmakers too, because I know we often will waive. I think our fees are like $35 and the really late is $50, but we'll often waive it for international filmmakers because we're also, we know it's harder for certain areas for them to send us films.
We do that for developed countries as well, underdeveloped countries. Questions? Go ahead, right there in the red shirt. You have the mic already. Nice. Go ahead.
I'm just wondering, when you're screening the movies, do you always start with the first 5 minutes or do you jump ahead?
Yeah, let's talk a bit about that because, as Klaus has mentioned, it's impossible, you don't always have to watch all of the film. Talk about the delicate art of how much of a film we watch, when we fast forward, what, you know.
I just smell it. And
It's a, scent, I mean, scent the amazing thing is that from watching the first minutes, you usually have a very good feeling of the quality of the film. So you really get it's a question of experience as well.
Yeah.
But we always watch 15 minutes or 20 minutes of the film, the first 15 minutes. The beginning of a film is crucial, always, also when you show it to broadcasters. But if a film is strong, we'll watch it all the way through, of course. So when you realize that you want to continue watching it, it's already a very convincing indicator for the quality of the film. And we usually also watch if we don't watch all the film, or if we say, well, I want a colleague of mine to have a look at it as well, we also always watch the end of the film. So, but it's, if a film is strong, we'll watch it all the way through. But sometimes you, after 5 minutes, you know what it's like.
And
you know?
I mean, if there's anything that sounds unfair about that, if you think, well, you know, but the ending is the best part of my film, you have to take into account that festival audiences are ruthless audiences. If they're not grabbed by a film in the first 20 minutes, they'll walk out. You see people walk out of festival screenings all the time. So if it's not grabbing us in the first 15 to 20 minutes, it's not going to be grabbing our audiences either.
Do you at all worry about, you know, this notion that a certain kind of film really gets hurt with a slower film that takes a while to sort of build? How do you sort of deal with that?
I think that's absolutely true. I mean, I watched The Monastery on the screen at IDFA and kind of, you know, didn't get it. And then you and a bunch of other people would tell me it was the best film in the festival. You know, we make mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely. I always have to remind myself to, you know, be patient. Patricia, any words of wisdom there?
No, I just was thinking about a couple of films similar, like there's a film called Four Elements or Working Man's Death. There are certain films that are really, really visual films that are about experiencing the imagery of it, and they're really designed to be a cinematic experience. And I think it's a challenge for those filmmakers to get through to that first festival programmer because they're watching it on a DVD that may not sort of do justice to what the experience is going to be. But if it's beautifully shot in the opening moments, if you grab in the first couple moments,
even if a film is very slow, for example, there was a German film called Into Great Silence by Philipp Gröning. 2 hours 40 minutes long. It's about a monastery monks in a monastery in Switzerland who are not allowed to talk, Trappist monks. So there's hardly any word in these 2 hours 40 minutes. And it's very slowly told, but from the quality of the camera and the way it's being introduced, you feel that it's different, that it's very special. And I watched these 2 hours, 40 minutes on my TV screen, unfortunately, and couldn't stop watching it. So even if it's often, especially if it's a slow film, you get the signs, the camera style, the way it's being edited, which shows you this is special. This is really special. Can happen to you that you watch 50 minutes and after 20 minutes, something crazy happens and later on you find out, shit. Can happen.
I programmed Into Great Silence at the Toronto Film of Toronto, and a funny story. Just they had sent us a digibated screen in our screening room because they didn't want us to watch it on the monitor, but it was unsubtitled. So they said, "Well, we'll just give you the transcript." So I thought, "I'm going to watch this 3 hour unsubtitled." So they gave us a transcript that was 2 pages, not a lot of dialogue. Into Great Silence,
and it won the European Film Awards.
It's fantastic. Yeah, it's fantastic. Questions? Who has a mic?
I have one.
one here.
Go ahead.
I have a two-part question. I want to find out which festivals are best for first-time filmmakers. And the other question is, if you have a Canadian TV broadcast involved, because we all know we need that to do our financing, et cetera, how does that affect the international festival circuit?
I think we all want, for say we all want to discover talented first-time filmmakers, so all of our festivals and all the other festivals want first-time filmmakers. Is there any?
Some have categories, though, I think, for first-time filmmakers,
Okay.
right?
That's true.
I think Full Frame might, and I'm not sure about
time?
Others.
I don't know about Full Frame, but there are some. Yeah.
ITFA has a program called First Appearance, you're right. That is, so they give a special attention. But I think we all incorporate that within the bodies of our festivals, whether we have a special section or not. I know there's 33 first-time filmmakers at Hot Docs this year, for instance, spread throughout the program. Part two of your question applies mostly to our international programmers. Does it matter that there's a Canadian broadcaster on board at all?
Briefly to the first part, we have, for example, out of that reason to give more attention to young filmmakers, we introduced this year a young talent competition and have an award of €10,000, which is Canadian dollars, probably, I don't know, 13,000 or something, or 15,000, for the next project, as in first financing for the next project. So we really want to encourage and to support these filmmakers to continue their work, because this is often so difficult after your first work to get the recognition and to be able to finance your next film.
We're going to do that next year, too. I just decided right now. I'm just kidding. Great
and,
idea.
Sorry, second part was Canadian broadcasters.
Canadian broadcasters.
No problem for us to have a Canadian broadcaster involved. I mean, you need broadcasters to finance your film, usually, a documentary. And even if it is being shown on Canadian television, this will not disturb us. We only don't want the film to have been shown in Germany before.
Good. Anyone else want to speak?
I think in general that's true. That I mean, I showed a film last year that had shown on UK television, but you know that's over there. So
yeah, us too. Yeah. Same thing. Who has a mic? Sorry. Go ahead.
I have two quick questions. One of them involves mid-length versus feature documentaries, and whether there's any. I mean, I'm finishing a film right now that's right on the cusp of being a mid-length or a feature documentary. So. Although my priority is to make the film whatever it needs to be, I have to say I'm wondering whether or not, if I was a bit more ruthless with the fat, I might be able to, whether mid-length, there's more programming slots for mid-length, or whether that really has anything to do with it at all.
Is it because you have a broadcaster and you need it to be a certain length?
Actually, it has nothing. We're just making the film according to the length it needs to be. So there's, I mean, except that I'm, you know, wondering about this mid-length thing because we're so close to the cusp.
Should she stretch to a feature because there's no slots for mid-length at your festivals? Flair, does Sheffield play a lot of mid-length?
No, we don't. We take films of any length.
You take films of
Shorts
any length?
As well.
Tom, for you, though, it's all features.
For us, it's features, but I tend to think that features that are a little stretched out, you know, are not going to make it.
Not going to work,
So I would say... You know, knowing nothing about your film, my instinct tells me that, you know, probably shorter is going to be better, and that you'll have a stronger film, and a stronger film is going to have better chances getting into a festival than a weaker film that's longer.
And if I could just sneak in one other question, our film is it's an animation hybrid, and I know that you're seeing more and more combinations of fiction techniques with documentary techniques. Does there ever become a line where for
great question.
Documentary films, film festivals, where it's too much animation or too much that kind of crosses the line from, or are blends welcome?
I think we're all seeing a lot more hybrid work. Klaus, is there a place where you draw the line?
Well, we are looking for this kind of films as well, because I am personally very much interested in films which explore the boundaries of the genre. And as we are a festival for documentary animation, this concept is a very old-fashioned concept, and because it was a short film festival in the very beginning, and for years it was why animation documentary, and now it becomes very exciting to explore those films which cross the boundaries, and you can tell some stories with this very specific style. So we're looking for that in a way, or interested in that if it's convincing. One remark to the length of the film, you could always make two versions of a film, one TV version and one feature-length version, if it's strong enough. I really agree with you, and I think if you make a feature-length version, the film should be strong enough to sustain on the big screen. This is something you would be heading for, and it should be strong enough to be theatrically distributed. And there it's always good to get the advice of a theatrical distributor who looks at your film and says, yeah, it could work on, it couldn't work. So this is something to have in mind.
Great advice. Another question? We'll just get a lot of questions in quickly here. Go ahead, whoever has the mic. Oh, you right there, go ahead.
Could address this to Tom, if I could. Mr. Powers. Just curious about Monastery. You mentioned seeing it and not being that taken by it at first. I'm just wondering, did you go back to it and have a look at it after the recommendations this week? And do you reconsider it objectively for your audience beyond?
Well, I should say that it wasn't something I was exactly considering for my festival, because it was showing at IDFA. It'd be very rare for me to take a film out of IDFA, because IDFA is in November and our festival is in September, and we're generally looking for much newer work. So in a way, I could give that as an example as a kind of hypothetical without burning myself too much, because it would probably be, you know, out of consideration just time-wise anyways. And then it played at Sundance, and it's extremely rare for me to overlap anything that's played at Sundance.
Well, beyond that, I guess what I'm trying to get to is just so much of it is personal opinion, obviously, when it comes to watching films. And do you take that into consideration and reconsider things beyond your own?
I think, I forget, it was Patricia who said earlier that you know, you try to take account for a certain amount of your subjectivity, and one of the benefits to having a large screening staff is that when you encounter something that, you know, this just isn't for me. This is a film about a musician whose music I don't care about, but I'll try to share it with someone. You know, I'll try to challenge myself with someone else's point of view. And I think all of us make some kind of effort to program beyond our own tastes. That, you know, there's a certain amount of our taste that is undoubtedly reflected in the films we select, but also it's about, you know, being able to explain this collection of films. You've curated this collection of films. This collection of films should mean something, should say something about what's happening in documentary filmmaking at this time. And it's about being able to have that kind of conversation.
Great, thank you.
Folks, this was just a brief session. We can only really scratch the surface. So explore all the websites of Leipzig, of Sheffield, of Toronto, and of Silver Docs. I know there's other film. Are there other film festival programmers in the room? I know there's Ilava, some more festivals. So talk to some of these other. Oh, there's Kosovo, Vitan. So talk to some other festival programmers too, and just learn the festival circuit and learn your film and what would be the best home for that. So thank you all for coming. Thank you very much to our panel for sharing their wisdom, and enjoy the last panel.
Yeah, thank you.
Great job, thank you. Yeah. Okay.